right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. And today's program is the last show in the hottest month in recorded history. You got that? And I'm going to start with a question. What actions are actually commensurate with the challenge we face? What do we do when children are tortured in concentration camps? What do we do when black people are repeatedly referred to in Nazi language as an infestation by the President of the United States? At the back end of the show, we'll hear some remarks by Steve Rohde from a July 21st Evening of Conscience, Free the Freeway 9 and UCLA 5. Steve Rohde is a constitutional lawyer, lecturer, writer, and political activist. He is immediate past chair of the ACLU Foundation of Southern California and a founder and current president of the Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace. Before that, we'll hear from Chantel, one of the Freeway 9 and a member of Refuse Fascism LA and the Los Angeles Revolution Club, and Annie Day of the National Revolution Tour. They'll be talking about new developments in the case of the Freeway 9 and the UCLA 5 and why the Democrats are not part of the solution for the dangers facing all of humanity today. But opening the show up, I'm happy to welcome back Lenny Wolf and Luan from the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution Tour, which just hit Chicago. So let's hear that interview now. I'm really pleased to be bringing back to the show our first guest. His name is Lenny Wolf. And Lenny is a pleasure to have on. He's a veteran communist and a fighter for the new communism of Babavakian. And he's from the Get Organized. He's part of the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution Tour. You think you're woke, but you're sleepwalking through a nightmare. And right now, they're hitting the streets in Chicago. Lenny, welcome to the show.
Hey, Michael. I also want to introduce my comrade here who's also on the tour, one of the young people who's carrying this forward and really fighting on the front lines every single day. Luan, okay? I'm going to have her say a hello, too, okay?
Sure. Hi, Luan.
Hey, what's up?
Well, a whole hell of a lot right now. I'm hoping you're going to tell me what's up.
Yeah, so we're getting organized, getting people organized to be a part of the movement for an actual revolution, because there's all these different solutions that are being propagated which are going to lead nowhere and worse. And we're seeing this. There's a lot of people who right now are sitting on their hands waiting for 2020 while children are being locked in cages, while we're hearing all this racist vitriol about go back where you come from, while the youth, you know, right now in Chicago, like when they go into the downtown area, are being sent on trains back to the South Side, you know, being told go back where you come from. You know, this is a really crucial moment in history for people to actually be stepping forward and stepping into a movement that can really change everything and get behind this leadership of Babavakian. And we're out to organize the thousands, and we were just in L.A., and now we're here in Chicago.
All right. You know, one thing I'd like to ask you is like, you know, there's a phrase that is being popularized in relation to all this, and that's Red Summer. Let's talk about that, what that means.
Yeah, so 100 years ago in 1919, on July 7th, there was a youth named Eugene Williams, and he was on the raft of Lake Michigan with his friends, being youth, you know, in the hot summer. And these youth on the raft, they crossed over from the unofficial colored side to the white side, and they were stoned to death by white people. And when black people tried to go out and actually save them, they were prevented from doing so. And this sparked a whole wave of racist riots where, you know, these so-called athletic clubs, which the Dailies actually came out of, went out and burned down black people's houses, shooting them down and doing a lot of racist violence. And this happened all over the country. But what happened here in Chicago was people fought back. And that is something that, you know, has also been buried, you know, in history. The police were a part of this. The state was a part of this. And even though this happened, you know, 100 years ago, that white supremacist vitriol is here, you know. It's here and it's on a whole other level. And, you know, we're going to be out there on having a commemoration, not just to speak to what happened then, but also to speak and point the way forward out of this madness, to really bury this whole system which can't produce anything else than this planet, let's be clear. You know, we're seeing constantly new forms of white supremacy and oppression that are happening to our brothers and sisters, not just here, but all over the world. And that right here at the border, where there's, come on, there's children in cages, you know, and people are being told, oh, don't worry about it, those aren't your people. No, those are our people, right? And so we're going to be bringing a revolutionary commemoration and actually speaking to the way forward. We have to be fighting for a world where all people, you know, are treated as full human beings and where we actually have a real future for all humanity, not America and Americans, you know what I'm saying? Like, actually, a real future for people all over this planet. And we're going to be calling on people to stand together and actually send this message 100 years later, that there is a way out of this madness and that no more. That's going to be some of what we're doing this week and what we're bringing people into. And, I think that I actually want to let Lenny.
Okay, that's fine. I
have very little to add. I think that really put things out there very well. I would say this.
Go ahead.
That, first of all, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that people in fighting back, people took up arms against what was being done to them. People saw this is a fight that has to really be fought, you know, and we can't just sit back, we can't wait, we have to fight it. And there's things to learn from this. But there's also a way which I believe, I just want to underline what Luan was saying. It's not just that we have to replicate that fighting spirit, which we do, and which we need much, much more of today. But we also have something we didn't have in 1950. We have someone who's brought forward, Bob Avakian, who's brought forward an analysis of the world and of this country's role within it, a way to wage a struggle, to wage a revolution, to overthrow this system that's brought down, that just, as Luan was saying, cannot do without and continually morphs new forms of this, this white supremacist disease, you know, that's not just a disease, it's integral to the way capitalism, imperialism in the United States has grown up and functions. You know, I heard D.L. Hewley made this point. It's not, you know, it's like the way he put it was racism in America, but the way I would put it would be racism in capitalist imperialist America. But I'll say with what Hewley says, are like conjoined Siamese twins, but you can't separate them because they're conjoined at the heart. So you can't somehow surgically deal with this reform, that reform. You do have to overthrow this system. And then you have to not just do it around that question, but around all these forms of oppression that Luan was bringing forward. And with the spirit Luan was bringing forward, that we're emancipating all of humanity. We've got that. We've got a strategy that Bob Avakian brought forward. We've got the Constitution. And what we're doing here, we're going to be at the commemoration here. We're going to be doing our commemoration, but also there's other people commemorating, and we're going to be bringing forward this solution, not for a seat at the table, but to overthrow the table and bring forward a whole new way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're, you know, that's what this is going to be. That's what we're very much looking forward to this, and this is kicking off an entire 4 or 5 weeks of activity where we do aim to bring forward scores and hundreds of those folks who people say are not, you know, dozens, scores, and yes, hundreds of people in one way or another turning their face towards and being part of the movement for revolution.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's really tremendous. And I really look forward to talking with you about this much more on a regular basis as we go through this when you're in Chicago and as the show shows here. Basically, tell people how they can get in touch with you. If there's people from Chicago or there's people here or anywhere that want to go to Chicago and hook up with folks, how do they do that? And then we're going to have to move on. But I really do want to emphasize, I want to have you back probably next week to talk about what's developing as you're going out there. So can you?
And you need to come out here, Michael.
I was going to say that. I'm going to come out there.
I'm going to talk to you about that.
Some Chicago hot dogs. That's those burritos, the teppanyaki. I'm going to let Luan tell people how to hook up. But I do want to have all your listeners go to the live stream Sunday. Mm-hmm. It's going to be on Facebook. Tune in to RevCon. And it's going to be on, or you can go to RevCon.us to find the link. But go to that live stream, people, okay? and listen to Michael Slate, too. Now, I'm just going to have Luan take us on out of here, okay?
All right. Thanks a lot, Lenny. Luan?
Hello?
Hi. You're going to take us out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want to make sure you can hear me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, people, you know, you have a role to play in this. Like, we're really trying to bring people to be a part of working on how it is that we make this possible. And, you know, there is a role that you can play. You should go online, but also send in your thoughts and send in your questions and do this wherever you are, you know. We're calling on people not just to follow this, even though you should, but also to take up this approach that we're bringing out there. You can go to revcon.us. Read the reports, see some of what we're actually doing, and look, there's an actual organizing kit that's online, and it speaks to what we call the 5-2-6, which speaks to the five stops that, you know, are things that the system cannot reform away, from the white supremacy, the male supremacy, to the way in which our immigrant brothers and sisters are being treated, to the wars for empire. These five things that cannot be stopped, the two choices that we really have, not Democrat and Republican, but either keep the world as it is, as it goes worse, and we have, you know, no future for future generations, or make revolution. And the six points of attention, which the Revolution Club lives by and fights for, which speak to the kind of world, you know, that's possible, mm-hmm. where we have no borders, where people of different genders and nationalities are treated as full human beings, and the kind of world that not only is possible, but we have to be living by and fighting for today.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find this on RevCon. Us and be modeling this and spread this to others too.
All right. I want to thank you very much, Luan, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon. All right?
All right.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
All right. Bye now. We've been listening to an interview with Luan, a member of the Revolution Club, and Lenny Wolf, a veteran revolutionary and an advocate for the new communism developed by Bob Avakian. And I wanted to mention that the live stream they're talking about is available at revcom.us. We're going to take a break and be right back, so stay tuned. We're going to move in. We're going to invite people, our next guest, to be here and talking with us. And it'll be Chantel, who people have heard on the radio before. She'll be on the phone. And Annie Day, who will be walking through this door as soon as I mentioned her name. Yep, it's moving. She's moving. Is she moving? I can't see. Yes, she is. She should be moving. Annie, come in. Chantel, how are you?
Great. How's it going?
It's going good. You sound just like you were on Sunday when I saw you last. And sitting across from me is my favorite person to have sitting across from me, Annie Day. Hi.
Hi, Michael.
Well, let's jump into this because it's like really, you know, what we're talking about here right now is there's some very important things going on in Los Angeles right now in relation to the movement, in relation to people standing up against the horrors that are being brought down on people. And I guess maybe what I'll do is I'll start with Chantel to talk about. Chantel, you have been you're one of the people facing some fairly serious legal problems. Actually, the chance of they're trying to put people in jail for an extended period of time. There's a whole process going on. I want you to tell people what is happening. Refresh people about the case because we've talked about it a little bit, but people need to know more.
Sure. I'm currently in trial. It's now in a pretrial phase, but I was already on trial once with a co-defendant of mine, Alex, facing 6 charges each, up to 2 years in prison. Throughout the lengthy trial process, we won. There was a mistrial, but the prosecution immediately declared that they were going to retry us, and we are in that process now.
Okay, and where is that process? What's happening with it now?
So we are in the middle of, I don't know, we're going through our pretrial motions right now and setting up a future trial date probably in the next 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me this. I think actually, look, there's a real importance to people knowing why they should support you. And I was thinking about that last night when I was listening to this, because people need to know, you know, actually what you did and why you did what you did. You know, it's really important for people to know that, because it's one thing to just be telling people, okay, I'm on trial. But it's another thing for people to actually understand deep in their minds why, what you did that brought down the wrath of the system, that you guys did that brought down the wrath of the system.
Right. So what we were on trial for is sounding the alarm against fascism. We got on the 101 freeway and blocked traffic to, you know, to show people what's needed to stop business as usual and to show what kind of actions need to be taken in order to drive out this fascist regime. The LAPD sent in a confidential informant to our groups after the first action and created, out of nothing, created this whole case against us. And now they are prosecuting us to this extent in order to criminalize dissent and the type of dissent specifically that's actually needed in order to drive out this regime.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to ask Annie to join us now. Annie, how are you?
I'm good, Michael. How are you? I'm thrilled to be hearing our comrades in Chicago and give them a shout out.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I want people to, you know, basically, I know people know you've been on the show enough times, all right? But I also think that it's important that people know that you're part of the National Revolution Tour. And, you know, that's really important, because tell people what that is doing, and then we can move into some other stuff.
Well, I think you heard it from Luan and Lenny in terms of what this national tour is and you know, really putting the new communism on the map and engaged throughout all of society and organizing forces for an actual revolution in the thousands in near term. And look, for any of us and all of us, if there's going to be any better world, it's going to have to go through the very sharp struggle that's happening right now in terms of the consolidation of fascism and the unleashing of fascist stormtroopers. Now, you know, we understand that while Donald Trump says make America great again, America was never great. And that this is a presidency and a regime that comes out of the deep bowels of an American white supremacy and male supremacy and the American first jingoism and the celebration of an arrogant know-nothingism. At the same time, the opposite of this regime, the Democratic Party, and are war criminals. And actually, the second slogan of the tour is the Republican Party is fascist, and the Democratic Party is also a machine of massive war crimes and crimes against humanity. This system can't be reformed. It must be overthrown. Now, whether or not you recognize that, we have to, you know, whether or not you think America was never great or you think it still can be, we actually do have to come together from many different perspectives and confront the extreme danger that's concentrated in this regime. We have to unite broadly. And there's an organization that's called for this named Refuse Fascism. And this was the call that Chantel and Alex and their co-defendants in the Freeway 9 were responding to, recognizing that what was needed was a different kind of protest. And a big shout out to the people of Puerto Rico for showing us once again what that different kind of protest looks like, that there have to be first thousands, hundreds of thousands, and then millions acting in the streets in sustained, nonviolent determined mass mobilization and protest with a single demand. This nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. Now, this was a call that was issued by Refuse Fascism, actually coming right after the election and then again after the inauguration. And they set November 4th as the day that was to begin this. This was what the first time Chantal Alex got on the freeway with others. They had this sign, November 4th, it begins. Now, if people had actually responded to their call.
That's what I was going to ask you.
If people had responded to their call at the time, instead of desperately clinging to some delusional hope that 2018, that the blue wave of 2018 was going to stop this, if people had responded to their call to break out of the normal political channels that brought this regime to power in the first place, think of how much better and how much different the situation would be right now. And, you know, Refuse Fascism was singular in its recognition that this was a fascist regime. I remember fighting with people 2 years ago, oh, you can't call it fascist. You can't call it fascist. Well, I think we can call it fascist, people. And when you actually recognize that this is a fascist regime, it's not just an unhinged lunatic. He's compiled a actual, you know, regime. Mike Pence is a biblical literalist Christian dominionist, meaning that but thinking the Bible should hold dominion over the Constitution, packing the judiciary with theocrats, moving to outlaw the right to abortion, putting tens of thousands of immigrants, I mean, literally in concentration camps, openly torturing them, open white supremacy, the white power symbol when he says AOC's name, even, you know, threatening and unleashing his mobs against their political opponents. This requires us confronting the immensity of what we're facing and learning from, yes, what the people did in Puerto Rico, but learning from what Chantal, Alex, and their co-defendants modeled. We have to get outside of the bounds of protest as usual, politics as usual, of being passive observers to a process that, you know, by itself, look, I'll say more in a minute. I'm going on, but about the Democrats. But so this is the deal. They stood out on the freeway to sound the alarm a year and a half ago, and they've been politically criminalized, persecuted by the Democratic Party city attorney, Mike Foyer, and spied on, surveilled, harassed by the LAPD.
And actually, even more than that, adding to that, this whole point about most recently, the outrageousness of what the police chief said at the police commission to justify all this.
Right.
This was stepping out. It was almost like one of those breakthrough moments where suddenly the truth is being, the monster is speaking the truth, you know, and it was very hard to look at that and not understand the depth of this and the importance of what those people did, what people did when they stood out in the freeway to stop this, and the importance, the need for people here to not only see the thing and say, yeah, I know about that, but to actually come into motion around that, to stop both the assault on the people and to stop what's going on in the society. So let's talk about that a minute.
Well, the thing that you're referencing, and your listeners should know about this, the LAPD police chief Moore on Tuesday at a police commission meeting, Isabel Cardenas, a co-initiator of RefuseFascism.org, went up and talked to him, asked who on the commission had approved sending in a spy into Refuse Fascism. And the chief Moore, like, not just doubled down, tried to justify sending in a spy. He made very engaged in very dangerous slander and distortion and just outright criminalization. He said members that identified themselves as being within Refuse Fascism traveled to other parts of the country. In other parts of the country, there had been criminal acts, including vandalism, assault with a deadly weapon, or arson. Okay, those are Chief Moore's words. I mean, just the ridiculousness of it is should stand out to anyone who has a basic sense of the right to civil liberties. These people may have gone somewhere. In that somewhere, some other people may have done something, and therefore now I'm going to investigate these people. It's, you know, it's ludicrous. But even more than that, it's incredibly dangerous, and it's setting people up. It's just it's a basic COINTELPRO, if people know that in terms of the history of LAPD surveillance. But look, this is a classic move of distorting a group in order to both further investigate them, further harass and criminalize them, and to set them up for even, you know, look, fascist attacks. This is the backdrop that we're talking about. So this is unacceptable. And, you know, people have to speak out against this. I do want to encourage people to call Mike Foyer, who's the L.A. city attorney, and demand these charges be dropped. Look, you know, these people stood out on the freeway to stop the literal existential threat that's happening. Trump is threatening to murder 10 million Afghan people. This is what he's doing. This is what this regime is doing. And these heroes put themselves on the line to say this must stop, and they're the ones being criminalized? This is unacceptable. And anybody with a sense and an ounce of justice should speak out. I do also want to tell people to call Mike Foyer, the Democratic liberal city attorney, and say drop these charges on the Freeway 9 and the UCLA 5. And Mike Foyer is at 213-978-8100. He's the city attorney. Demand the charges be dropped.
Now, real quick, I want you to give those numbers real quick again, that, you know, so people can know, write it down if they didn't catch it this time. But I want people to know in their heads now.
Call Mike Foyer. Demand the charges be dropped. His number is 213-978-8100. And then thing number two, I do want to encourage everybody, go to revcom.us. There's an hour-long speech from Bob Avakian, who Lenny told you about earlier. It's called "The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. A better world is possible." It's the most in-depth scientific analysis of what we're facing with this regime, what will and will not stop it, and what we have to do to come together to stop it. So I want to encourage your listeners with that. Look, there's no going back to what was, people. It was a nightmare anyway, but there's no going back to what was. We have to come together. We have to unite broadly. We have to go forward with courage and conviction to drive this regime from power, to stand with these defendants being criminalized for standing up for that, and to fight for a future that humanity could survive and thrive in.
This is the Michael Slate Show, and we've been talking with Annie Day and Chantel from the National Revolution Tour. We're going to listen to a statement from a member of the Revolution Club on why she joined the Revolution Club, and then we'll be back with Steve Rohde.
I have had enough. I kept on thinking things would change when I became a Peace and Freedom Party member. I kept on thinking things would change when Obama became president. And you know what? Nothing has changed, because this country is still the same. It's based on white supremacy, genocide, and enslavement of people. And enough is enough is enough is enough. This is why I'm a member of the Revolutionary Club. And when I put on this shirt, I'm stepping outside of my box, and I am letting everyone know, my friends, my family, and people I don't even know, that things have got to change. We need a better world for humanity, for all of mankind. We need to save the planet. We need to save animals. We need to save immigrants. We need to save our own children. We need to save ourselves.
On July 21st, there was a special program at Emmanuel Presbyterian Church in Los Angeles. It was an evening of conscience to free the Freeway 9 and the UCLA 5. I'm going to play the remarks of one of the speakers, Steve Rohde, a lawyer and activist and a founder of the Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace.
First, they came for the communists, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the socialists, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. Those are the cautionary, haunting words of the Reverend Martin Niemöller speaking in 1937. Those words have come down to us as a warning that a government will begin by moving against those in the margins, those who are vulnerable, those who are controversial, some who are despised. That government, unrelentingly, if not stopped, will continue to move even as against its own citizens. On September 11, 2001, it was Martin Niemöller's words that came to my mind. And when we formed Interfaith Communities, United for Justice and Peace, a group of Jews, Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, Sikhs, and humanists, We came together because we feared exactly what this nation would do in the wake of 9/11. And it was literally the next month that I sat down to write my version of the Niemöller poem. And I adapted it as the months transpired and some of our worst fears began to be realized. I have not changed a word of this since those early months in 2001 and 2002. But listen to what has transpired and is transpiring as we apply it to this authoritarian fascist regime under which we are forced to exist right now. First, they came for the Muslims, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Muslim. Then they came for immigrants, detaining them indefinitely, solely upon the certification of the Attorney General, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't an immigrant. Then they came to eavesdrop on suspects, consulting with their attorneys, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a suspect. Then they came to prosecute non-citizens before secret military commissions, and I didn't speak up because I wasn't a non-citizen. Then they came to enter homes and offices for unannounced sneak and peek searches, and I didn't speak up because I had nothing to hide. Then they came to reinstate COINTELPRO and resume the infiltration and surveillance of domestic, religious, and political organizations. And I didn't speak up because I no longer participated in any organizations. Then they came to arrest American citizens and hold them indefinitely without any charges and without access to lawyers. And I didn't speak up because I would never be arrested. Then they came to institute TIPS, the terrorism information and prevention system, recruiting citizens to spy on other citizens. And I didn't speak up because I was too afraid to speak up. Then they came to institute the Total Information Awareness Program, collecting private data on every man, woman, and child in America. And I didn't speak up because I couldn't do anything about it. Then they came for immigrants and students from selected countries, luring them under the requirements of special registration as a ruse to seize them and detain them. And I didn't speak up because I was not required to register. Then they came for anyone who objected to government policy because it only aided the terrorists and gave ammunition to America's enemy, and I didn't speak up because I didn't speak up. And then they came for me. And by that time, no one was left to speak up. Ladies and gentlemen, we are living in a country where you can open the Los Angeles Times and see a front page headline, LAPD used informer to spy on activists. The mole was ordered to monitor meetings of Refuse Fascism ahead of an anti-Trump protest record show. This is the United States of America today. It's a United States of America that is plagued by the Trump-Pence regime, but that did not start this way only under the Trump Pence regime. It didn't start only after 9/11. It has been endemic in the racism and bigotry and discrimination and hatred that all too frequently raises its ugly head in this country, and that has called on crucial moments in the history of this country for the people to organize and resist. This is a copy of a police surveillance report that was disclosed in discovery in the trial of the freeway defendants. This report of their investigation reads, and listen to how constitutionally protected activities are stated in a police report as if they are somehow crimes, somehow ugly, illegitimate, improper activities that a police force and a city attorney must use its resources to move against. Based on their stated and published ideology, this group planned to initiate an Occupy Wall Street type movement in downtown Los Angeles on November 4, 2017. Over the course of the following 4 days, they hoped to gather as many sympathetic groups and individuals as possible in order to initiate a further, larger act of civil disobedience that was to begin on November 8, 2017. The anniversary of the last presidential election. Refuse Fascism LA is a coordinated subgroup of the national anti-fascist group RefuseFascism.org. The collective goal of the national group and our local RFLA group is the furtherance of an agenda that includes mass protests, freeway closures, and government land occupations. This program went on to conduct illegal, unconstitutional surveillance, secreting themselves and disclosing as undisclosed participants in the meetings of Refuse Fascism, lying and portraying themselves as sympathetic to the goals of Refuse Fascism. They secretly recorded those meetings, expecting to find evidence of wrongdoing. Frankly, you read the transcripts, and these are simple organizing meetings. Meetings you and I have attended often for years. Oscar Wilde said, "The problem with socialism is too many meetings." So instead of documenting sinister, corrupt, and illegal activities, it almost seemed as if these earnest activists were persuading the informant to the rightness of their cause. Listen for about a page to one of these transcripts. Confidential informant. What about, are we gonna do like freeway things again? Or major things like that? Activist. I'm not sure. Confidential informant. Yeah, I'll just have to keep coming to meetings to find out. Activist. Yeah, I mean, you want to be part of that? Confidential informant. I'm down. Why not, you know? Activist. Dude, confidential informant. I mean, I thought the freeway thing was pretty good. Activist, yeah? Confidential informant. I mean, it sends out messages. Activist, uh-huh. Confidential informant. You know, it stops people. It makes them look and think. And you know, activist, well, that's a confidential informant. That's the whole object. Activist, well, yeah, that's the whole object. And that's one of the reasons that a lot of people are pissed. Maybe even though they hate Trump, they're like, that's not a way to make who wake up. And it's everyday routine. You know, they wake up and they take a shower and they eat breakfast and they get their cup of coffee. Oh, sorry. They know, they get their cup of coffee and they get in their cars and they're driving and they're thinking about what their day is going to be and they're going to do at work. Confidential informant. And then they run into us. Activists, well, fucking fascism right here is consolidating, attacking Muslims, attacking LGBTQ people, attacking immigrants, threatening to incinerate 25 million people in North Korea. Yeah, you know, everything that they're doing, you know, attacking the media and the fascists, right? They're driving. And, oh, you know, like, oh, shit. Like, what's going on? And why are these cars stopping? Oh, like, you know, they're confidential informant. Yeah, they're going to get mad, and they're going to look and see what's happening. Activists, my whole day, my routine, my whole day is being interrupted by these people. And when they get out of their cars and they see November 4, it begins. Confidential informant, it must mean something. Activists actually raising their sights and fucking just looking at like what they see, like right here, right? Confidential informant, opening their minds. Activists, there's a bigger world out there than just, you know, drinking your coffee and hopping in your car. Confidential informant and going to work. Activist and going to work and then come back and then the next day and then the next day and then the next day. Confidential informant. There's more to it. There's more to life. More important things. Activist. Yeah. You know, even though the idea is under capitalism, a lot of people do have to do all of that to be able to survive. That's another contradiction, that people do have to hop on their cars, have to do just look at straight at what's going on with them, because that is capitalism. That's what they got to do to be able to survive, you know. So that is a contradiction. And we have to fight, we have to struggle for people to get over that shit, for people to actually raise their sights and see, look, fascism is fighting to be consolidated, and that's gonna mean for the people of the world, confidential informant, yeah.
So I've gotta tell you that the courage of these young people in standing up to that regime and disrupting it. You know, there's a lot of reasons people go on the freeway. Unfortunately, people wait in heavy traffic all the time. Heavy traffic is part of life in modern America. Well, we should also be part of American life, and what should be part of American life is protesting the Trump-Pence regime. You know, think about this freeway stoppage. We interrupt traffic so politicians can go to their next fundraiser.
We interrupt traffic so politicians can go to the airport and fly on to their next meeting. We do that. We accept that. People wait in traffic for that. We delay traffic to make movies in this big city of Los Angeles. Traffic waits to make movies. Traffic waits for a car chase on the news. Traffic waits for a lot of reasons in this city and in cities around this country. How about making traffic wait to protest a fascist, racist regime? These courageous activists were charged with conspiracy. Conspiracy was developed in the 13th century as a tool of monarchies to suppress any resistance to those regimes. Conspiracy, charging conspiracy, implies secrecy, evil, plotting, and treachery. But a great Supreme Court Justice, Robert Jackson, in 1949 said, conspiracy constitutes a serious threat to fairness in our administration of justice. And Judge Leonard Hand in 1925 said that conspiracy is the darling of the modern persecutor's nursery. Dissenters. Throughout history, conspiracy, criminal prosecutions, criminalizing lawful protest has been the device of governments to suppress dissent and disagreement. We saw it among the dissenters and the anarchists in World War I, among the communists in the 1950s and 60s, among Vietnam War protesters. And in an important Supreme Court case, Justice Jackson said, I consider criminal conspiracy a dragnet device capable of perversion into an instrument of injustice. The second protest we're talking about today was a group of courageous protesters who went to object to the speech of Steve Mnuchin at UCLA, a college campus dedicated to academic freedom, to freedom of speech. Who says when the question and answer period should begin? The question and answer period began when those young, courageous students chose to have a question and answer period. Mr. Mnuchin could wait his turn to speak. Why don't those students have an equal right to speak in an open college campus? We should be applauding, not criminalizing, that kind of conduct. We've got to speak up against the use of criminal trials to punish lawful protest. At the recent trial of the freeway defendants, the prosecution was losing its way. They thought they had the jury convinced that this was a simple case of trespass. Believe it or not, prosecutors paid with our tax money told the jury it was as simple as peanut butter and jelly. That's what they told that jury. During voir dire, when the jurors were being questioned and the prosecutor tried out that line, one of the prospective jurors raised his hand and said, I don't think it's that simple. So these young people spoke and they testified in their own defense. And that jury got it. Sometimes juries get it. And that jury understand why that freeway was blocked. By the way, the video shows you cars got around the sign anyway. And at UCLA, they made it worse. Outside the protest room, they told other protesters they had to disband. They were lawfully exercising their rights. And they issued, the police force of UCLA issued a verbal ban that those protesters could not come back to campus for 7 days. And when the charges for the original protest were dropped, and one of these courageous protesters, who I think is with us today, came back to campus within 7 days to participate in 11 minutes of silence, he was arrested for violating the ban that had been orally issued by the police force previously. This is in First Amendment law, what is called a prior restraint. They were muzzling those students not to come back for 7 more days to lawfully exercise their rights during that period. And when they did come back to lawfully exercise their rights, they were prosecuted and arrested again. That's unconstitutional, unconscionable, and we should all be resisting and opposing it. Now, let me close with two comments. There's an extraordinary new book just published, The Terror of the Unforeseen by Henri Giraud. Extraordinary writer, many of you know his work. Henri Giraud, The Terror of the Unforeseen. Listen to his words. We are in a real and present danger. People of power have turned their backs on the cautionary histories of the fascist and Nazi regimes, and in doing so, willingly embrace a number of authoritarian messages and tropes. The cult of the leader, the discourse of the savior, white nationalism, a narrative of decline, unchecked casino capitalism, systemic racism, silence in the face of a growing police state, the encouragement of state-endorsed violence, the hollowing out of democracy by corporate power, a grotesque celebration of greed, a massive growth in the inequality of wealth, power, and resources, a brutal politics of disposability, an expanded culture of cruelty, and a disdain for public virtues, all wrapped up in an authoritarian populism. That's what we're facing. That's why we're here. I was very touched by the words of Peter Alsop in your song, Draw the Line. He was previewing those drivers on the freeway. We'll get up and go to work like everything is fine. And he talked about his children, and that touched me deeply. I have 3 kids and 3 grandkids. My oldest grandchild invented a name for me, Peepaw. I am Peepaw to my grandchildren. And I imagine, as my grandchildren grow older and study history and study this period in American history, they will come to me and ask, "Peepa, what did you do back then? Peepa, how did you let this happen?" I have to answer that question for my grandkids. You have to answer that question for every person in your lives. We have to answer that question for the children and the grandchildren in this country and around this world. What did you do then? And I want to close with the words of Frederick Douglass, the great former slave and abolitionist leader who spoke courageously in another time that demanded bravery and people to resist. He said, "It's not the light that is needed, but fire. It's not the gentle shower, but thunder. We need the storm, the whirlwind, and the earthquake. The feeling of the nation must be quickened. The conscience of the nation must be roused. The propriety of the nation must be startled. The hypocrisy of the nation must be exposed." Thank you very much.
And that brings us to the end of yet another show. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com.
I wanna hear your thoughts, see it all. Like a heat waves through the walls. You wanna go out tonight, you want to know.